This is episode 6 of season 2, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, featuring Tom Zaeke, CEO and founder of TerraCycle, and Luke.
You're tuning in to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, where women share inspiring stories about their careers in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, Barbara Lee.
Let's do a plastic glove. I would start, you know, as effectively latex in a tree. Molded, put onto a form, and now I'm a plastic glove. I, you know, get put in a box, I get shipped. And someone buys me. Now I get used for like 30 seconds. I then get put, not in the garbage this time, but let's say into a TerraCycle, you know, system or a TerraCycle zero waste box. Once I'm full, I get picked up and shipped to a TerraCycle facility. So then I go through a special process where I get cryogenically frozen, turned into a powder, and sold back to glove manufacturers who integrate it into plastic gloves tip of the glove so it has some grit on it. And in a way, I go around again and again and again.
That's Tom Zaeke, the founder of TerraCycle and Loop. The first iteration of his company, TerraCycle, went from selling fertilizer for plants to working with some of the biggest brand name companies to create closed-loop consumerism. In school, Tom's economics professor said something that struck him as quite profound. The purpose of business is profit to shareholders. Tom didn't like that answer, so he wanted to challenge that, and he started a for-profit company that could also change and make things better for both society and the environment. From selling compost to now upcycling weird things like chewing gum and feminine care products, Tom's company is about to change the trajectory for the entire CPG market by the introduction of his new initiative called Loop. Announced at the World Economic Forum this year, Loop is a first-of-its-kind system that will reduce single-use containers through a convenient, circular solution. Here's how it works. Consumers will go online to the Loop website, loopstore.com, and have the ability to shop from different retailers who have partnered with Loop to redesign their packaging to be waste-free. The consumers will then receive their durable products in Loop's state-of-the-art shipping tote that reduces the need for single-use shipping materials like cardboard boxes and ice packs. Consumers then get to experience the elegance and convenience of these beautiful products without any throwaway packaging. Then comes pickup. There's no need to clean or dispose of anything. Consumers finish the product, place it back into their empty package in one of the Loop totes, and then Loop will pick it up directly from their home free of charge. Loop scientists have developed custom cleaning technology so that each product can be safely reused. Loop replenishes products as needed and returns the refilled shipping totes to consumers. If there is recoverable used products such as diapers, pads, razors, or brush parts, they will be recovered and reused or recycled. I was so extremely excited to be able to have the opportunity to speak with Tom because I am a huge fan of TerraCycle. I nearly quit my job to join their company when I heard about Loop and how cool the entire process will be. They launched this year in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. So definitely sign up for the list on their website so that you can get the first notification and be one of Loop's first customers. This episode of Trash Talking with Eco Warriors is sponsored by Organic Basics. Listen to the very end for a special offer for all you Trash Talking listeners and to hear more about how this innovative Danish company is changing the fashion industry. Let's get Trash Talking.
My name is Tom Zaeke. I'm the founder and CEO of TerraCycle. And what TerraCycle does is basically try to eliminate the idea of waste. And we do that through a number of different models, but basically things like trying to make non-recyclable waste from dirty diapers to cigarette butts nationally recyclable. Integrating that waste back into products, like we turn ocean plastic into famous examples like the Head & Shoulders shampoo bottle, and then finally try to move products from being disposable and effectively becoming waste to durable and not becoming waste.
How did this whole thing start for you?
This all really began, you know, when I was born in Budapest, and back then, you know, Hungary was still communist. It was under the Iron Curtain, and I really say it began there for me because in growing up in a communist environment, and, you know, from a Western point of view, we love to make communism seem very negative, and there are tremendous negatives. You know, you couldn't do anything to do with business, but there was a lot of appreciation for society, environment, and those sort of things. And then we had a big environmental disaster occur in 1986. Chernobyl happened, and that allowed the borders to destabilize. And, you know, we were able to leave effectively as political refugees to Germany and then Brussels and Holland, and then finally landed in Canada. And there I really sort of picked up a love of environment, and really my eyes opened to what entrepreneurship is all about and the power of business, you know, to be able to manifest change. I think it's more powerful, you know, than war, than disease, than politics. It's incredibly powerful. But the question then becomes is what is sort of the moral compass? And this really hit me when I ended up in Princeton, which is in New Jersey. That's how I got to the United States for college. When taking a Econ 101 class, you know, the professor at the very beginning said the very, very first thing, on the very first day, in the very first lecture was, what's the purpose of business? The answer she was hoping for was profit to shareholders. And to me, that felt, you know, like, look, profit is important, critically important. I'm a capitalist, you know, totally get it. But is that the reason that customers buy products, that vendors make them, that employees and team members work at these organizations? I felt like most stakeholders in the business were not involved in that point. To me, I really, because of that, wanted to start a for-profit company whose purpose was to change the world for the better, whether, you know, through things that were better for society or the environment, or frankly, ideally both, if possible.
Yeah. You got kind of a funny start on how you started TerraCycle all those years ago.
Yeah, that's right. You know, so for me, garbage became a really fascinating idea. I mean, the way I fell into it, because I really did fall into it, you know, my friends and I, or really more my friends in Montreal, were growing pot in their basement. They couldn't make it work. And they started feeding the plants organic waste that was fed to worms. And the worm poop made the plants grow incredibly well. And, you know, that was obviously inspiring on many levels, but especially sort of started this conversation, you know, and journey around waste. And waste is super interesting as a topic, I have to say. Like, so for example, everything in the world, everything you own, one day will be owned by the garbage industry with no exception. That's sort of crazy, especially in a society where we view our status in society by our accumulated stuff.
Right.
And not only will it all be owned by the garbage industry, we would have paid them to take it when that happens, which is also sort of odd and a little weird. And for how big it is and how everything, bar none, like truly, like look around the room you're in and every object, with no exception from the carpet, you know, to the floor, to your clothing, to the desk you're at, to anything, will be waste. How unsophisticated the solutions are, relatively speaking. It's a little crazy.
Yeah. My one argument is my plant. That one's definitely just going to go back to compost.
Well, but that is still a form of waste management.
That's fascinating. And I'd love to hear, I know it's been a really long project and you're starting Loop, which is obviously like a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
I'd love to kind of hear like how you got from ground zero to where you are today.
Sure. So I'll give you sort of, you know, the cliff note version of the past 16 years, you know. So at the beginning, it was a sort of inspiring worm poop moment, right? And I got into it. I realized there was no big worm poop companies and basically started TerraCycle as a worm poop company. I mean, the logo for TerraCycle, which is so crazy. It's now on something like, you know, a quarter trillion packages a year. And it looks like a recycling logo. And it's intended to be that is actually a worm. That's how it was designed at the beginning. And TerraCycle, Earth Cycling, it's all about the worms. We basically ended up, after a lot of trials and tribulations, creating worm poop in a used soda bottle. So everything was waste, you know, the organic waste inside that was fed to worms and made into a tea that was then packaged in used soda bottles. Even the trigger sprayers were leftovers from major companies. I mean, it was pretty righteous from those points of view. And then we got it into major retailers, you know, long story short, into, you know, Home Depot, Target, Walmart, these places. And over a 4 or 5 year period, grew that into a nice made from garbage lawn and garden company. And in the process, I'd left school. But then, you know, we always do this, even how Loop came to be a few years ago. But, you know, even at the beginning, these early pivots, we always ask ourselves, are we accomplishing our mission, which is to eliminate the idea of waste through what we do? And with the worm poop in a soda bottle and later wine barrels from old wine barrels or bird feeders from, you know, from waste and all sorts of amazing lawn and garden products from waste, you realize that if we make the product the center of our company, like we become a product company, then we're going to be motivated to pick the very best inputs to make our products. And that's totally reasonable, as it should be, frankly. If you pick the very best inputs, even if they're technically waste, you're going to pick the very best types of garbage. You won't pick all types of garbage. And to me, that then created a big problem, you know, which is that there's no way we're going to be able to go and deal with dirty diapers, cigarette butts, chewing gum, all things we actively do today. And so we did a massive shift in our business, effectively shutting down, you know, the entire business as it stood and reinventing it, as where the business question, the hero of our topic, became the garbage. We created what is our first and biggest business unit today and still growing, which is our national recycling programs, where basically, you know, we worked with producers and retailers to identify waste streams that they particularly care about, you know. So if it's Colgate, it would be toothbrushes and toothpaste tubes. If L'Oreal, it would be cosmetics and so on and so forth. And through their funding, would effectively solve the economic gap, which is why things are not recyclable today. You know, so what does make something not recyclable? It's not that it can't be, but simply that it costs more to collect and process than the results are worth. That is it. And so if you solve the economic gap, you can make the non-recyclable recyclable. So that was a huge pivot. We, you know, we had to, it was really challenging. You know, a lot of people didn't believe in it at the time. You know, why move away from a successful, at the time, $6 million, you know, enterprise? It was really sort of odd for some folks. And, you know, it was a very challenging thing, like any pivots are. Then, you know, that happened about 10 years ago, and that has just grown and grown. You know, it's expanded into business to business products as well, like facility waste. We even acquired a company, this fantastic company called AirCycle, which was then rebranded to TerraCycle Regulated Waste. So we did that last year to help bring these services to really complex materials like industrial light bulbs, medical waste, batteries, and so on. And if we go back a bit, you know, then 5 years ago, we thought, okay, well, it's great that we're able to collect and recycle things that are hard to recycle, but what about integrating that waste back into consumer products, really closing that proverbial loop? There, you know, we started thinking about how do we take these waste streams and not take, you know, say cosmetics and make them into outdoor gardens and playgrounds or something else that may not be as high a technical value. How do we get something that's, you know, seen as very difficult to work with, like, say, ocean plastic, and put that into those cosmetic bottles? And that launched, you know, our entire second division, which is all about unique materials, unique waste streams back into products. Think like ashtrays made from cigarette butts, or toilet seats from dirty diapers, or Head and Shoulders bottles and Ren Clean skincare packaging, fairy bottles from, you know, ocean plastic, and umpteen other such examples. And that then sort of 2 years ago started asking, we asked ourselves the question yet again, you know, is what we're doing, collecting and recycling hard to recycle materials and integrating that recycled material back into products, is that the foundational solution to waste? And again, you know, the answer was, while it is critically important to recycle as much as humanly possible and to put as much recycled content into products as humanly possible, recycling is not the answer. Mm-hmm. Because imagine if you wake up every morning with a migraine headache. And I know some people, you know, suffer from this and it's incredibly tough. They may take some medication to, you know, as simple as a Tylenol, right, to take the symptom away. Mm-hmm. But that medication isn't solving the reason of the headache. It's just dealing with the symptom. And that's sort of what recycling is like. You know, it's critically important because we have this garbage crisis, but it's not dealing with the problem at the root cause. And in really writing about this and thinking about it deeply, the root cause of waste is simple. It's disposability. It's not plastic that's evil. It's not paper or metal. It's using that object once. That is actually really not a good thing. So then you have to say to yourself, okay, but if that's the negative, disposability, you can't stay negative on it. What is the positive? And the positive of disposability is unparalleled convenience and affordability. And I think those things are still ridiculously important to people, which is why we vote for them absolutely every single day. So Loop, which actually just launched a month ago at the World Economic Forum in Davos, is our third model, which is effectively trying to solve for disposability while maintaining the convenience and affordability of disposability. And it's that sort of combination, if you will, that we think will be quite breakthrough. And so far, it's really hit a nerve, you know, with people out there.
First of all, what do you recycle gum into?
Well, gum, you know, so like anything, we first look at, is it reusable? Gum is not. Is it upcyclable? You could make some art from it. But really, there we go to the third topic, which is the science of it. And gum is a polymer, you know, it's a rubber. So you can make like a rigid plastic product with 35% used chewing gum, as an example.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
So diapers, again, not reusable. You can't upcycle it either. And so there we look at it's a disinfection process, like it gets sterilized. This is actually not our technology in this particular example. This is a partnership with P&G, Procter & Gamble, who makes Pampers, and a joint venture partner of theirs called Vater, who helped develop this amazing technology. And it's basically the diapers are sterilized and shredded into their different components, which are primarily plastics, superabsorbent polymers, cellulosic material. And that can then be reconstituted into those materials, not necessarily into new diapers, but those materials do have other purposes as well.
Wow. Okay. That's crazy. I had to ask. I cannot imagine what you are turning this back into.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor, Organic Basics.
This episode of Trash Talking with Eco Warriors is brought to you by Organic Basics. The fashion industry is a dirty bastard. Organic Basics is changing that.
Back in the days, if you look at the food industry, like a lot of food would go bad within a couple of days because it simply wasn't engineered to last for longer. But now with a piece of bread that would usually go bad in a couple of days, now you can keep a piece of bread for a couple of weeks. And that kind of innovation is super important to higher the efficiencies of the resources that we have. And so we kind of thought of it this way, like how can we, with a sustainable innovation, create a product that you can wear for more days and thereby wear more and wash less.
That's Christopher Emmanuel, co-founder and co-CEO of Organic Basics, a Danish company looking to change the fashion industry by creating clothing using new, innovative fabrics that don't require a lot of washing.
We looked at a lot of different technologies and techniques. And one of the interesting things was that NASA, back in the day when they were developing the space program, they worked with silver as an antibacterial material. Obviously, it wasn't very efficient for them to bring a lot of clothes out to outer space, seeing that it's very expensive and consuming a lot of energy to just bring 1 kilo to outer space. So they developed this fabric that could be worn for days and weeks without having a negative effect on body. And so we looked at this silver technique and we kind of sourced, we spoke to a bunch of very best experts on the field of using antibacterial materials in fabric. Found very, very experienced factory in Turkey, in Izmir, that have worked with silver as an antibacterial for hospitals, for the medicinal industry, which is an area it's very important to keep antibacterial.
Want to find out where else Christopher and his team found silver used for its antibacterial properties? Listen to the very end where we shine some light on silver's incredible past and how Organic Basics is using this element to create fabrics for the future.
What was the reaction when you were telling people, like, I'm going to recycle diapers?
You know, by the time we got there, it was, you know, like people at that point were taking it, like, you know, pretty seriously, pretty normally, and no worries at all, right? Like, it takes a couple of extremes. Like, once you do cigarette butts, people get very comfortable that you can sort of do, you know, any crazy thing. I mean, we'll be enabling femcare recycling, if you want to think gross things, next year in France, as an example.
Okay, cool. So when you're talking about closing the loop, you obviously are building these relationships with these pretty big businesses who are obviously getting a lot of flack for their packaging. And when they do brand audits of all the, you know, plastic waste in the ocean, like, it's very clear that it's only a few companies that are very responsible for some of the disposability of these materials. How does that relationship building go? And how are you able to convince them that, like, this is something that they should go in on?
It's multi-pronged. I think they all agree there's a sustainability issue, and that gets you in the room, right? But that's not the reason in and of itself to say yes. That's just the reason that they'll say, okay, this is interesting, and let's really look at it. Then it's really about showing them how they can win at business at their core goals by leveraging these topics. So, for example, by recycling diapers, Pampers will increase its market share. And that market share increase will create the profit that justifies having the program. And that type of, or, you know, a retailer doing in-store collection will help drive foot traffic. You know, in all cases, it's about thinking through what are the other benefits beyond just sustainability.
So this is what I find really interesting and fascinating when you speak about this stuff, because you obviously get economics of business very well.
Yeah, and you have to, I think. This is a big challenge. I advise a lot of social entrepreneurs out there.
Yeah.
And they many times, they're very passionate about their core idea. And it could be anything. It could be, you know, female empowerment. It could be climate change. It could be waste. But, and this is the, you know, and you can't feel skeptical about this. The companies out there, that is not their primary motivation. Their primary motivation, if it's Nike, sell more shoes. If it's Walmart, have more customers walk in, buy more stuff. And you can't vilify that, because that is those organizations' primary motivation. So to get your primary motivation to be funded, embedded, and scaled by these organizations, think about it in their point of view.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That's like incredible piece of advice for everyone, because, you know, everyone has their thing that they're looking to promote, whether it's themselves or their business or their product. And so I guess something that'd be really interesting to hear from you is kind of like how you keep motivated while you're doing all this work. I know you mentioned the other day that you're up at 4 a.m. I can't imagine that you're doing that every single day, but I could be wrong. How do you kind of stay motivated to do the work that you're doing?
To me, what really motivates me is by working with, you know, all over the world. I mean, TerraCycle's now in 21 countries with these large organizations. Every time we embed an idea, it scales at a crazy, crazy speed. And to me, seeing that out there, especially when I'm not in work mode, but random mode, you know, like, you know, just like living my life and I walk by, you know, a retailer and there's a TerraCycle collection kiosk, or I walk, you know, or I see a package, you know, in my day-to-day life and there's our logo on it explaining it can be recycled or so on and so forth. To me, those create such sort of big lifts that it fuels me for a very long time.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's obviously, like, it's taken a while for the company to really take off. I know I only heard about you guys a couple years ago, and I bought one of your boxes for recycling clothing.
Right on.
That's one of my most, like, frustrating pain points, and I left it at Kickstarter's office here in Greenpoint, New York. But, like, I can imagine, like, it's also, like, very frustrating to, like, just day-to-day see, like, all the waste that's out there, and, like, for me especially, like, when I see individuals, like, continuously reach for a plastic fork instead of a metal fork, like, yeah. That it frustrates me to no end. How do you kind of get past that frustration and just, like, focus on solution?
I think you have to accept the world for what it is, right? That, I think, is step one in doing that. And in this journey with Loop, for example, we had to accept that people will not sacrifice for the environment. So, for example, Loop is not the first time the idea of reuse has existed, not even close. There are tons of refill stations all over the place and conscientious supermarkets. There are packaging-free stores. You know, you can buy bulk and refill yourself. There's all sorts of methods to do reuse. But why has it not caught on? Why is it still microscopic in scale? It's because of two things. And this is all about accepting people for what they are. The first thing is that it's tremendously inconvenient relative to the convenience of disposability. And so what's the learning? People are addicted to convenience, so you have to win on convenience or don't expect to win at the market. Second is they really want affordability, so you have to do the same there. And really what that boils down to is that if those things are there, convenience and affordability, then they'll choose sustainability. And if you can give them other benefits, they'll choose it even more. Because the real person we want to get to is the person who doesn't care about the environment, and get them to, without caring, think and choose these outputs, or, you know, these new alternatives. And one cannot be skeptical about that. If we just go and say, why are people like that? God, people suck. Shouldn't they be better? Shouldn't they care? That is not going to get you anywhere. You know, in Loop, the way we try to address this is we say, well, first, look, it's not our products. It's, you know, the world's, you know, biggest brands out there. You know, we also work with startups and organic, you know, producers and so on. But, you know, we all also are working with every major supplier almost, you know, from Coke, Pepsi, Nestle. So it's, hey, you don't have to even know our product. It's already your Tropicana or Häagen-Dazs or whatever. We also then focus on how do we make it incredibly convenient by embedding it into retailers and making it feel as similar to disposability as possible, because that brings convenience. So in Loop, you don't have to wash your packaging. You don't have to refill it yourself. You literally throw it out into the equivalent of a garbage can that we give you, but except it's a reuse bin. So it's trying to mimic all that convenience of disposability and not making you do any extra work. And then as a way to give bonuses, because that just gets you to the same, it's how do you then upgrade so that people desire it? So that's where, to us, design is so important in the example, like the Loop platform, because that puts it to a whole new level. You know, your ice cream doesn't come in a coated paper box. It comes in double wall stainless steel that even keeps your ice cream frozen on the go. Or your manual toothbrush is no longer just a piece of plastic. It's, you know, the bottom is beautiful alloy. The top is a replaceable head. It's just a whole, even if you don't care about anything to do with sustainability, you should still love these products. And to us, that's so important because then it gives even more benefit while matching sort of baseline convenience and affordability questions. And this is, you know, this is the way the world is. So let's play into it.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. It's so fun. I just started my yoga teacher training, and you just like touched on something that we actually talk about a lot, which is just like, you know, like people are people, and like you just have to like accept the world and everything as it is, which is like really interesting.
I fully resonate with that. And then once the people are in your yoga class or, you know, in the system, then you can make some subtle changes. You know what I mean? Like then you can sort of mess with the system a little bit, like unconsciously, you know, between us, we're trying to push more non-dairy, you know, vegan type alternatives in, you know, so I'm super proud that, you know, Häagen-Dazs, for example, their entries in Loop are way more vegan entries than their normal shelf. So those little things we can start pushing and curating behind the scenes, but you got to get someone in there, you know?
Mm. Tell me a story of like when you had like an aha moment with someone where you like get them to realize what the problem is. Like, I feel like when we live in the space, it's really easy to understand everything. But like someone who really doesn't get it, they do not understand why throwing your organic material into the trash bin matters so much.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think consumers, I'm going to say this generally, because in the past 12 months, consumers have really woken up all over the world. And I think the reason that they have woken up in such a way is because, and especially the things like ocean plastic, you know, it's very specifically to waste right now, is because, you know, people started making it personal. I mean, there's microplastic in our drinking water, no matter where you're drinking that water. That hits home. And that is what needs to happen. That's what really, I think, woke up people. Over the past 12 months, wasn't the turtle with, you know, the beer thing around its neck, and how, you know, or the turtle with the straw in its nose, you know, or all these negative things. It's about you, my friend, are drinking microplastic, and you may just not live as long because of it. And the more personal people, you know, the more it becomes personal, the more people wake up. And again, you know, folks out there be like, oh man, why do people suck so much? Why does it have to be all about them, right? But you know what? It's the way it is. So play into it, right? That is way more powerful than saying, did you know, animal species are reducing at an incredibly big rate? Did you know there's, you know, deforestation? You know, people don't care about deforestation until they can't breathe properly.
Yeah. Wow. That's really true. Have you ever had like a moment where you had to like explain this to someone who really doesn't get it, or like, you know, had to like try to like educate someone about these problems?
Yeah, you know, so for me, it's a little less with individuals, right? Like consumers per se, because I interact mostly with, you know, the people I'm trying to convince to start platforms, mm-hmm. right? You know, so companies and corporations. And what I would say is generally speaking, everyone has an awareness, you know, of their issue in these companies. You know, like, trust me, Starbucks is very aware of the paper cup problem, or Mars is very aware of the candy wrapper problem, and et cetera, et cetera. But the real big ahas for me, you know, and I think it's probably not exactly the way you're asking your question, but it's the biggest learning I can pass on is when I started going into these companies and framing it in what I care about, like, hey, Pampers, I can help you with your diapers, you know, Pedigree, I can help you with your pet food packaging, you know, waste problems and so on. It didn't really go far. I mean, it went somewhere, but not as far as it could have. The moment I then think about what are they, those human beings in the room, what are they evaluated on? What are they going to get their bonuses on? What are they really looking to do? Is that they want their lives to be easy. They want to minimize their workload, and they want to be able to get promoted and make their bonuses. And that's going to come from how well their business does, you know, how much more someone prefers, say, Pedigree instead of Purina or whatever it may be. And the moment I started framing my goal, which is how do we solve waste, into that perspective, everything started clicking. And that was maybe the biggest sort of aha, more for me personally than, you know, watching someone else's. How do you get through to someone? And the key is you got to be walking in their shoes, you know, and thinking in their way while honoring your background goals.
Yeah. What was the moment that it clicked for you that, like, the environment was important, or that you cared about the environment?
Gosh, for me, it was an evolution, you know, but really Canada. I would say it all hit in Canada for me. Canada is this beautiful country. It's all environment, hardly people. And the people there deeply respect the environment. The culture really embraces it. You know, we'd go on all these, you know, long canoe trips. And that, to me, just really made me fall in love with nature. And then the contrast, I got to tell you, of landing in the U.S., so this is sort of the, you know, a big one for me, right? So I do all these, you know, as a kid in high school, 1-2 week canoe trips up in these beautiful parks, you know, in Canada, where you'd literally go with a backpack in a canoe and off you went. You never see a human being for 2 weeks. And I came down to Princeton, and they, you know, when you get there, they, before you start classes, they say, oh, we're going to have this freshman orientation. Would you like to do camping or community service, or would you like to skip it altogether? And you know, I said, hey, I love camping. Let's go camping. And this was the American version of the canoe trip. Literally, it was a canoe trip, but it was going down the Delaware River where all you saw was development on both sides and like the campsites. I was expecting like, we make a campsite. Oh, no, no. It was like a trailer park, you know, place where you could plug in. And there was garbage everywhere and all this. And I thought, man, this is nature. This is just horrendous. And, you know, that's not to say the U.S. is like that everywhere. It's just that was the sort of experience I had in New Jersey when we went, quote unquote, camping. And it really opened my eyes, you know, to the challenges, you know, not just the beauty, but the problems.
Yeah. And how have you worked to convince people to like join you on your crazy journey?
So the way I'm not about trying to make you an environmentalist. There's many great people who are going to do that, and you know, God bless them. And please, you know, let's make sure that happens, right? But my focus is a little different. You know, my focus is to try to change you without you even, ideally as close as I can to without you knowing it. So sure, if there's desire, for example, like you said that, you know, you got involved and purchased a zero waste box to recycle things in your life. There, yes, if I can fulfill that desire, I want to give every option to the people who have desires to do the right thing to be able to do that. If someone wants to recycle their cosmetic waste, I want to make sure that they have the option to do it. Or if they want to recycle their cigarette butt or dirty diaper, I want to make sure they have the option to do it. So I want to play into the people's desires where there may not be an opportunity for them to action. Because in many places, if you want to recycle something, but there's no system, then tough luck. But my sort of real core goal is how do I do that with as much unconsciousness on behalf of the people as possible, because that I think is the recipe for the greatest change as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Do you have like a tip for someone who is trying to consciously be more eco-friendly? Like if you had to like go up to someone, they're like, hey, like Tom, I really want to like change my ways and I want to do something that's going to be like better for the environment. Like what should I do today?
So great question. I would say that because let's make it a simple answer, okay? Every environmental problem, bar none, in my opinion, is linked to one and only one thing, which is consumerism or consumption or, you know, the act of buying things. That doesn't matter what you care about. If you care about, you know, the fact that half of the animal diversity has disappeared in 50 years or deforestation or air, water quality, even just general rights, eco exploitation, you know, that sort of thing, doesn't even waste. It's all linking to the act of buying. And we get so hung up every, you know, 4 years on who we vote for politically. And that's so ironic because we're voting without money, without, you know, really with just a pen and a piece of paper or a punch card or whatever. And we're doing that really, and if you're in the U.S., between choice A and B. So we're giving it's like a coin toss type choice. And we get freaking super hung up about it. Like we spend so much time talking about it and dedicating media time to it. I mean, it's sort of ridiculous. But we vote multiple times a day with actual money for the future we want with what we buy. And we do that, I'd have to argue, really unconsciously. Imagine voting in a political election without knowing who you're voting for. And that would be sort of crazy. But we do that all the time with what we buy, because what we buy is what the future will be. You know, what companies do is they go out there and do market research to figure out what consumers want. And their job is not to convince you what you don't want. Instead, their job is to get you what you want as best and as cheaply and as conveniently as humanly possible. And I think we take this really carelessly, this decision. It starts with voting with your money. And here's the cool part about voting with your money. Not buying is also just as powerful to vote.
Wow. Yeah. But like, wait, I want to dig into that though, because like, if Patagonia doesn't know that, like, I'm not buying their sweater over, like, or I'm buying their sweater.
Who cares? No one cares about you as the individual, okay? Right? It's not about you not buying. It's about the total sales, right? So let's put it this way. Pick a average company. Let's go, you know, it's like an average producer. Let's go to a Pepsi. This is an actual example I'm going to describe to you. Pepsi has a whole range of beverages. And let's just pick two. Let's take the carbonated soft drinks and let's say they're natural juices. And on one side you have, say, Tropicana. On the other side you have, say, classic Pepsi. If consumers start shifting their purchasing to juice and not buying as much carbonated soft drink, what would Pepsi do? They'd basically be like, oh, the market's shifting. We should start investing more in juices and developing that side of the business and not focusing on as much on the carbonated side of the business and understand that that will go away one day. And in fact, that's what they're doing. They're not going to then pound you and advertise to you, hey, please come back to carbonated and forget the juice. They're going to then play into that thinking and make it easier for you to get more juice. And that's the foundational point. Here's a crazy stat. If everyone stopped buying a product category, the whole world, it takes 6 weeks for that category to go away as an idea. Wow. Like go bankrupt, be delisted, be done, like over, you know?
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's incredibly powerful. And here's the crazy part is consumers, instead of honoring that power, say, oh, it's the big companies that forced me into doing everything. I mean, come on. Yes. You know, like, I just have to say, that's sort of like saying, oh, I'm not going to choose who I vote for. It's the political advertising that got me.
Okay.
I mean, how much would you just look at a person who said that to you, like, what the hell are you saying? You know? And don't you, I'm sure you've seen this where consumers say, it's not me, it's the system, you know? But man, we live in a free country with a lot of choice.
Yeah. No, that's a very poignant point. Like it's true. And I think the issue is that people don't feel like they have collective power. And I think it's really silly that people think like, oh, what one person does not make a difference, because I think it's hard to see like the effects of our actions.
Yeah, that's totally, totally true. And it's also really hard to understand the consequences of every product. You know, you may say, oh, I'm a huge fan of organic yogurt. Sounds great, but what about all the methane the cows produce? You may be a fan of, say, a cosmetic that wasn't tested on animals, but what about if it was made from palm oil that's, you know, destroying the rainforest and killing species? It's almost as bad as testing on animals, right? So there is no perfect product except the product you don't buy. And man, I'd say, you know, like even it's ironic because, like, you know, this new platform we just created, Loop, is all about, you know, moving people to a new type of consumerism or a new type of consumption. You know, my overall message is the best consumer is one who doesn't buy anything. Don't buy Loop. Don't buy anything. You don't have to recycle anything. You don't have to worry. And you are, the earth will thank you.
Yeah. Interesting. How do you feel about electronic waste?
I mean, look, any waste sucks, and electronic waste is its own species of really, you know, challenging waste. Yeah, it's really, you know, a difficult thing. You know, I think the biggest problem, it's not that electronics are bad. In fact, electronics have done some amazing things. It's the disposability, the planned obsolescence in electronics that again, is the real foundational. And this is what I really want to highlight, is that there's not necessarily evil, you know, the people who work in these large organizations are wonderful, you know, people. They're not evil people. You know, the idea of electronics is a wonderful thing, saves lives, does amazing things, allows us to be talking right now today, you know, and so on. Allows your listeners to be able to hear, you know, our conversation. I mean, these are pretty amazing things that none of them were around just a few hundred years ago. And this is sort of what we started at the very beginning of our discussion with. It's if you only serve the god of profit, then you may do some evil things. You know, that to me is the problem, right? It's, so for example, there's a great story about the light bulb. So I'll just ask you, you may know the answer, but when the first incandescent light bulb came to be, this was like over 100 years ago, how long do you think its useful life was?
Oh, I don't know, 10 years?
Well, again, let's put it into perspective. Today, you know, a incandescent light bulb, I think, has like 5,000 hours of burn on it, if you look at it, you know, at a Home Depot or something.
Okay, all right.
So do you want to change your answer, or do you want to stay what you said?
A month.
Okay. It's still lit today.
What?
It hasn't gone out. You can look this up, okay? And what happened was the light bulb companies, the makers, realized if our product doesn't break, that's not a big long-term business solution. So they created a cartel, this is all public information, that effectively forced any producer, retailer, blah, 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 of light bulbs to take the useful life of a light bulb down to, say, about 5,000 hours so that they would break and you could sell more. That's the invention of planned obsolescence. And it worked. And it only, you know, only recently did it really get disrupted with the advent of, you know, the new light bulb technologies like LED and so on. But isn't that crazy? But this is the problem of blindly, without looking at impact, serving only the god of profit.
Wow. Okay. I did not know that. Where is this light bulb?
It's, I think, in like a lighthouse, either California or Florida. I'd have to look it up, but.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's crazy. I learned so much today. How do you balance your like personal life? Like, I can't imagine like.
Okay, here it is, by the way. I'll just tell you, it's the longest lasting light bulb is in Livermore, California. Check this out. Installed 1901 and has never been turned off.
Holy cow. That's amazing.
And that's 24 hours. Like, it's not that the light bulb sat there and they turned it on from time to time. That's 117 years of undisrupted burn.
That's insane. I want to go check out this light bulb. That's like my new destination now.
Yeah. There you are.
Oh, cool. How do you balance your day-to-day life, though, Tom? Because, like, if you're super busy and you live in, like, this whatever tri-borough-ish area of, like, New York metropolitan or whatever, like, it's really hard. Like, I struggle so much on a daily basis to make sure that buying, like, every time I buy freaking berries, man, like, it's, like, the tiniest little pint container of plastic, and it's so frustrating to me.
Yeah, I'm totally with you, and I'm not perfect. I'm just as much as others. I try to as much keep my eyes open, and I do a number of different things. So one is, the biggest intervention I have is I try to create business models for people like me who want to make a change, but also like convenience and affordability and all those things. And that's where ideas like zero waste boxes, Loop, and so on came to be, is to serve someone like me. You know, it's a Loop I really sort of created for myself. You know, I wanted to get away from disposable packaging, which I had a hard time avoiding. And that's how it, you know, was invented. It was very selfish. It was created just for myself. So hopefully you also like it, but it's all for me, you know. So that's one. That's maybe my biggest area of impact or benefit. You know, where I can live minimally, I try to. So, you know, I wear one pair of pants a year. I'm in my 2019 pair right now. I'm going to wear that every day till, you know, it's ripped apart. And it's a little awkward to walk into meetings with it. And then I'll get a new one. So I try to, as much as, you know, I can, cut down there. But I'm also a hypocrite in other areas where I have weaknesses. You know, I like to collect art. My family and I, we don't live in a small house. Not a monstrous one, but not a small one. But we are vegetarian. You know, I think that's actually a huge intervention to be able to do. Cutting out meat and animal products is maybe the first step if you want to do a very meaningful solution to the environment. And then I try to infiltrate that as much as I can. Like, I'm working very hard to take the company lunches across 21 countries vegetarian. Now, I have a lot of trouble with this. So the most recent manifestation of our vegetarian lunch program is, we order in lunch for all of our offices. And if you order vegetarian, the company pays half your bill. And if you order meat, you have to pay a 50% tax on the actual cost of whatever it costs us to order it for you.
Oh my goodness. How is that going?
It's really good. It moves a lot more people to vegetarian, and the people who really want meat, you know, they help fund the lunch program.
Huh. Wow. Okay. Really interesting.
But you know what didn't work? Me, what I wanted to do is full out cut it, like kill it. And it didn't work. It really backfired, you know?
Yeah, that's interesting. The Perennial restaurant in San Francisco, which, like, RIP, they just closed last month. And I'm so sad because I'm a big fan of Karen. They did something where they just added like $1 carbon fund to like any dish that had meat that was ordered.
Yeah, I think that sort of stuff is cool, right? But this is the nudging. I think the absolutism is hard. People break on it. It's one thing to sort of push someone a little closer to the light, you know, but it's a little bit more, you know, to throw them in the fire, right?
Mm-hmm. Cool. But Tom, thank you so much. To end off, what's your favorite thing that TerraCycle makes, like, or upcycles?
You know, for me, the favorite things, if I think about our garbage business, are the craziest waste streams. So I love, you know, the diaper recycling, the chewing gum recycling, you know, cigarette recycling. In the objects we help make, I'm a really big fan of our work in ocean plastic, whether it's Head and Shoulders, all the way to Ren Clean Skincare. And then I'm going to be, as soon as Loop goes live, you know, living my whole life in it. So hopefully people will join me there. But it's just it's a much better step in the right direction. Life looks a lot more awesome with it.
Yeah, I will tell you, I work at a small startup company. Some random person in my company actually sent the Loop, like, news article out to everyone in the company. Not me. I'm usually the crazy, like, environmentalist, but someone else randomly.
Isn't
someone
that better, though, that someone else who's like, right. Oh, that person was relatively, like, normal, or even better if they, like, voted for the other side, you know?
Well, yeah, and then, well, that's the thing, right? Like, we are a consumer. We make, this is so random, we make premium dog food. We make stuff in packaging that's disposable. Well, and
so you guys should totally sign up. We do a lot in pet food, you know, to collect and recycle pet food packaging. So mm-hmm. That's awesome. And then we do have pet food in Loop. So you guys should definitely consider, you know, creating a durable, reusable package with us.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Cool. Well, thank you. Thank you so much again for your time, Tom.
No, it's my pleasure. Great to connect.
I had a lot of takeaways from my conversation with Tom, but one of the biggest things that I noticed was how pointed all of his responses were to the questions I had. Loop is clearly going to be making a huge impact on single-use consumerism, and I cannot wait to have ice cream out of their reusable stainless steel tins like the one that Tom described. If you're enjoying the podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and share this episode from Apple Podcasts or wherever you're tuning in from. It makes a huge difference to the show and Trash Talking community when you open up the conversation around waste. Tune in again next week when we'll have more inspiring stories from eco-warriors around the world. We release every single Monday morning, so definitely subscribe and follow along. Thanks for listening and stay green. We're back with Christopher Emmanuel, co-founder and co-CEO of Organic Basics, who is telling us about the amazing properties of silver and how it has been used throughout history as an antibacterial agent from NASA to hospitals in Turkey.
We found out that silver had been used for decades to be antibacterial. So way back with the Roman Empire, the warlord would always have a silver water bottle because he was the person that just couldn't get ill. And also when you get a wound, you would take a silver coin and put it on top of the wound and then put a Band-Aid over that because that would keep the bacteria away from the wound. We found out that also the reason silver cutlery is actually made of silver is because it keeps it antibacterial.
But how to get silver into clothing?
So it was kind of cool looking at this natural material that was actually antibacterial. And so we looked at what kind of upsides are there, what kind of downsides are there, because silver will kill kind of all bacteria. And a lot of good bacteria exist in this world as well. We didn't want it to just wash out in the water system, kind of destroy all of the positive bacteria that needs to be there in the water waste. So we needed the silver to work only on the surface of the fabric. So we found a Swedish company that was specialist in this area. They took us through the whole process, like how the technology works and why they believe this is a future way to kind of wear your clothes more and wash it less. SilverTech is an antibacterial treatment that we use on our SilverTech collection to minimize bacteria on the fabric surface itself and thereby minimizing odor. You can read more about how it physically works on our website and why this amazing fiber is Blue Sign certified and environmentally approved.
Ready to start wearing the clothing of the future? Check out organicbasics.com/trashtalking and get free international shipping on your entire order of cozy organic underwear and high-tech socks.
Thanks for talking dirty with us. Tune in next week for more Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram @trashybeautyco.